Actually, it's called blackmail. Entrapment is what cops do to thieves. You coming?
It's time to take your girlfriend out of the equation.
Trumping the opposition, it's the US presidential race that is the Libero podcast, and leading the polls, I am your host, Richard Mead. Joining me this week, a big supporter of all things Bush, it's Mr. Andy Lane. Say hello, Andy.
Making podcasts great again.
And lastly, Barack, after a long break, it's Chris Belmore.
Well, I'd already worked out my witty comeback, but I think I'll just leave that one hanging there.
Nice, nice. Matt's impeached today at work and won't be joining us. But I think we've got enough to talk about without him. Where do you want to start? There's been a few things to chat about maybe this week in football.
Yeah.
Where you want to go in particular?
There was a scandal over the pitch dimensions in a couple of the League Two sides. I think we should really get into the
I've heard they're going to change the colours of the offside flag.
It's big.
I think
massive.
Probably talk about that. Let's just get to it. Let's get to it. Fat Sam, our most successful percentage, highest win percentage manager of all time.
He's not even Big Sam anymore. It's been less than 24 hours. How dare you? Unbelievable.
It's just
100% though. 100%.
You can't. 100%. He's going to be. You know, he's got his place in history, hasn't he? It's where to start here, isn't it? Obviously, the Telegraph story about him being offered a bit of money to give a bit of advice, which may or may not be shaky. And he's parted ways with the FA and no longer the England manager. Gareth Southgate stepping in for 4 games. Quit while you're ahead.
I don't really understand what happened. Was it like someone was posing to be like in the third party ownership and then they filmed him saying, you know, basically salubrious stuff and that was it, or like,
well, this is, I mean, I'll take something almost directly from the BBC website today, which was a quote from Pat Nevin, who said, looking at it from a legal stance at what Sam did, you can get round third party ownership, you can do that. Taking money to speak in Asia, there's nothing illegal there, and speaking about other people, it's not nice, but it's not illegal. Is it enough for him to be sacked? I mean, he poses the question.
I don't think they haven't pressed charges. Like, you don't have to do illegal things.
And I don't know that he's technically been sacked, has he, either? They've kind of parted ways, or something was the official statement, but obviously,
he's definitely like, you know, well, not that they weren't already, but brought the FA into ill repute, and he's disreputing the FA and stuff like that, which is usually legal grounds for sacking, I guess.
I think that's exactly it. Like, English managers got a long history of this. Venables was left after 96 because he had to defend himself in court and was eventually struck off as a finance director. You had the Capello Index when he brought out that on the eve of, 2010 World Cup, and there was a big scandal, obviously, because a lot of his players would be rated publicly by him on that exchange. And then you had Ericsson with all his infidelities. The point is that, oh, and Hoddle, obviously, with his comments in his book, you know, the FA, and I said this before, I think, as I said to Chris about sponsorship and the FA, they are in hock to a lot of their sponsors. They have to maintain a decent image. And whether you're at, Nevin's kind of right, but equally, if I'm sat there in a bar discussing my employer and how to subvert the rules that they have put in place or that the bodies they report into have put in place, they can decide to sack me. And fundamentally, they can't take the chance of their sponsors thinking they're going to
land. Are you using this as a stage to fess up to something?
Or is it more of a job application to say I'd never do such things?
Well, I mean, actually, we did at work talk today about how we've boxed off the England job. We're just going to bring back the Euro 96 squad and see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm game. Did anyone feel sorry for Fat Sam? I mean, the way he put it was, it was entrapment or entrapment's won out. And I mean,
that's a really, like, for me, that is a dicky thing to say. Like, entrapment has won out. Like, oh, I got caught. That's basically what he's saying.
I'm sorry,
it's
I
like,
got
well,
caught, yeah.
You did something, like, nefarious, and you got caught, and then you're saying, oh, entrapment won. It's like, no, you doing cunty things won in your dream job, you fat twat. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, that's personal statement to Chris Belmore.
I feel pretty much the same. I'm a little bit upset because I did hope that he could kind of shake that image and actually become like a decent England manager. But unfortunately, he has literally confirmed every single stereotype about English managers along the way. It's absolutely astonishing how he managed to do that. And in such quick time as well, you know, it's just really disappointing. And I'm not sure what's worse about it is that Allardyce is just part of a long line of people who've done that, or whether the list of names that can replace him.
Pearson. Take fucking Pearson.
I'm not sure what's more depressing.
Well, he looks like he's out anyway, doesn't he? Bless him. But let's not get to Pearson yet. I mean, two of the best things about what's happened is, one, obviously the initial media fallout is lols, but it does mean that it's well worth, if you're not already, following Not Big Sam, which is @big_Sam on Twitter. I mean, he's been value for money, which is no money, but he's been value for money over the years anyway, but he's just not let us down with this. I mean, I'm going to read a couple of ones. I'm not going to.
I mean, it's quite a specific sense of humor.
Yeah, but like, with a quote like, "It's Sammy Lee I feel sorry for. He's just got Sky Q in, for fuck's sake." Just amazing stuff. Well worth looking. And the other thing, I was kind of hoping that Greg Dyke would say something along the lines of, "Well, it's not for me to tell Big Sam whether he manages England or not," because for the ultimate irony, but he didn't do that, unfortunately.
Maybe Rooney will be the next manager.
Oh,
maybe Rooney is the manager.
Or Ryan Giggs.
Ryan Giggs, nice.
He seems to have done enough to be linked with Premier League jobs, so you know.
Well, I mean, Alan Shearer is one of the ones featured on the BBC website, and just so that he happens to be a BBC pundit, obviously has no connection there. But I mean, the names that are in the frame are obviously Southgate, who's taken over for four games, and then I'll list them out quickly: Pardew, Bruce, Howe, Wenger, who's, there's a lot of talk on Wenger, Hoddle and Klinsmann are the others that seem to be dominating
Bruce,
the favourites list.
Bruce might be sat there thinking, holy shit, I've actually timed this beautifully, because he left on a reasonable high at Hull. Mm. With some degree of integrity, whatever integrity Steve Bruce has intact. And yeah, I don't know, just looking at that list, Pardew is a bit of a Jeb end. Wenger's not going anywhere this season, certainly, and they'll probably want someone in before that. Hoddle, I don't know, that's weird, the Hoddle ones. I'm not that convinced by Klinsmann. I don't think, isn't he stuck over in the US anyway? He doesn't want to come back. I don't think he's that good a manager anyway, to be honest. I think the US would be pretty happy to see him go.
The reason on Klinsmann, though, is what he did with Germany and what he did with the US is that he completely changed the way they considered how they play football. I've been reading the Das Reboot book by... Jeremy Honigstein wrote, and it's because he basically got people to change the way they thought about football, and he changed the mentality of the team, and that is fundamentally what has held back England. So I know he was consulted when they were looking for the next manager. I know Bruce was consulted as well. I know Wenger was consulted. So that's the reason they're the names in the frame. Hoddle is always around this point because everyone considers him to have unfinished business. What they don't realise is that he's not very good. Do you know what I mean? He's been at a number of clubs since, and it hasn't really worked out for him. And I just think that, I mean, out of those, you've got to look at the ones that probably have the most to give are sort of Pardew and Howe. I mean, as much as
Pardew. I can't be dealing with Pardew, and Howe's still in nappies, isn't he?
Place.
But you know, as I said, the list is absolutely ridiculous. I do genuinely believe that Southgate will be the manager when we go to the World Cup. I think he'll act with the group's an absolute layup. I think he'll sail through the qualifiers because the team can play with blindfold on. I think we'll sail through the qualifiers, and I think then he'll get the job for the tournament, and they might well bring in someone off that. I don't get the Wenger thing. I don't understand why Arsene Wenger would want to take this job at the end of what is a massively illustrious career. I just don't get that.
I think you're absolutely right with Bruce in terms of the timing. I mean, he is free and he is about, and you know, you look at, if you are looking to go English with managers, you're kind of down to Pardew, Bruce and Howe at the moment. Pardew comes with his own set of problems. You know, Howe, like you say, is probably still a bit too young, and as we've alluded to on previous podcasts, you know, there were jobs that were too big for him previously, and we'll want to see some more confidence that he can step up to a big job. You know, they moved too early when they got McLaren in. I don't think they'll want to do that again.
What about Marco Bielsa, or you know, maybe it's time for Big Phil Scolari.
Maybe it is. Maybe it is. They're after a pay packet. So, yeah, maybe it is.
Visible disgust on Andy's face there.
I mean, just, yeah. I mean, wowzers.
Face for radio.
It is really just the thin end of the wedge, isn't it, that we're talking about here? You know, it really is bad. Anyway, look, can we talk about something else? Because this is depressing me.
Well, we can talk about something else, but I mean, it's going to be linked. I mean, the other thing, just to wrap this off, is 8 Premier League managers apparently accused of misbehaviour in terms of taking bungs. And obviously, we need to make it clear that they are not necessarily current Premier League managers. They are apparently current and former Premier League managers. So the Telegraph haven't named them. But they're saying
this is like As Live, isn't it? As Live reporting. Well, this is happening right
it's
now.
Actually Championship, guys. Apparently tonight the Telegraph have released a few more sort of allegations against Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, against Tommy Wright at Barnsley, and also against, and this is the biggest shock for me, is Massimo Cellino at Leeds. So no one again saw that coming.
These are allegations at this time.
They are obviously allegations, and I have no basis for print, and it is only on Twitter that I've read them. But those are the 3 latest names in the Telegraph investigation, which is going to run. I think the interesting thing is, you know, you're probably uncovering stuff that everyone knows is going on. But it is going to be a bit of a shock, I think, if we, you know, if this does continue over a couple of weeks, which they're talking about it's going to. I think it's going to shock everyone how widespread it is.
It's huge news. I mean, on the back of the FIFA debacle that's still ongoing and still running, you know, looking into the backhanders and the fraud that took place.
Well,
there.
I mean, you say that about FIFA, but at least they've solved that racism thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, close it down, guys.
That's
just
finished.
Done.
Success. Done.
Do you know what? I just had this visit. I just envisaged this amazing image of... do you remember George Bush Jr. with the mission accomplished? it was kind of... I was just wanting to see that all over again. But no, this is going to run for a couple of weeks. Obviously, the Telegraph look like they've done some homework here. The allegations are what they are. But it's going to send further shockwaves through the world of football and the fans and those people that are coming disenfranchised already about the state of the modern game, whether it's, you know, the big money or whatever. And this is only going to compound that misery along with what's happened with FIFA, you know, the World Cup in Qatar, etc., etc. I worry a bit for the state of the game generally because, you know, England are coming off a bad tournament after a host of bad tournaments, after a host of, you know, managers that haven't been able to pull it out of the bag. You know, a supposed golden generation that didn't do what it was going to do. And now, I don't know, what's our next manager going to do? Southgate's probably only going to bend to the sponsors if Rooney has to play. Where's this, you know, revelation, this revolution going to come, if it's ever going to come?
Well, that was a thoroughly depressing monologue, thanks.
Well, you know, and this is why I don't do a podcast on my own, because, you know... Exactly. Why are we singing? Let's move on to better news. The Champions League, that's been happening.
Well, we all divvied out tonight and watched different games, but I think there's probably one place to start, and that's Top North. What is it? The east side of Glasgow.
Yeah. This was incredible. I watched this. It's Celtic 3, Manchester City 3, and in a game with 6 goals that City were expected to win, they never led. This was a really, really excellent, if you like, old school, old fashioned cup tie. Lots of heart, lots of drive, not so many tactics.
Not much in the way of defending.
Well, you say that. I mean, no, it's true. It is true. There wasn't much in the way of defending. There were some big defensive mistakes, notably for Celtic's 3rd goal, although Dembele did an amazing job to somehow control that and swivel and hit it. Some big performances all over the park from Celtic, to be honest. Dembele and Brown, just to name a couple. But it was just like a high energy, big heart, you know, as much as there were some good quality performances in there. I mean, Sterling didn't deserve to score an own goal today. He was immense. They couldn't handle him at all. Rio Ferdinand said as much for PT Sport after the game. It was full of praise for him. But it was just back and forth, and Celtic really, undid Man City. You know, they put them under pressure that they weren't afraid to go at them. We kind of knew Rodgers wouldn't be. It was either going to be his success or his failure that he did that. But they were happy to match them. And then the last 20 minutes, they were kind of clinging on when they had nothing left. And, really, really good advert for football in what is quite, as we've just established, a bit of a bleak time for football. An amazing advert for football.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird with City. Like, they've been so dominant in the league, but yeah, it looks like they can and will concede goals because Pep doesn't want to play with any defenders. He just wants to put midfielders and fullbacks in every position. So
absolutely, and they've conceded goals throughout the season so far. I mean, obviously they've got a couple of clean sheets in there, credit where it's due, but they are conceding goals against the like of Stoke and teams that you'd think, you know, maybe they should be overcoming and whistling by with a clean sheet, but they're not doing that. An immense game, a huge crowd, really kind of intense performance, a great advert for the Champions League. And if you do get a chance, check out those highlights because it's just fantastic advert for football. Chris, you watched the Arsenal game.
Yeah. I caught up on the highlights of the Chelsea game as well, which you guys discussed last week. And it didn't look too dissimilar. In the first half, they totally blew them away. It should have easily been 4 or 5-0 at half time, if I'm honest. Two really high quality goals. Walcott scored them both, but Sanchez was the one who was making it all happen. He was absolutely immense in that kind of false nine. And I don't know, like, there was a lot of commentary about, oh, finally Walcott's found his feet, which is, you know, he does this. He goes through like 6 or 7 games having a good run. And then, yeah, like, you know, if he sticks it for the rest of the season, then we can start to talk about whether he's come of age. But I think the thing for me was, like, because Sanchez was dropping deep and creating so much space instead of just playing up top, and because he's so mobile himself, he kind of, when he was dropping deep, or he pulled over to the left quite a lot, and then Ozil would either slot into the middle. It meant that there was quite a lot of space, particularly for Walcott, but also for Iwobi. And it was absolutely bizarre from Basel. Like, they absolutely smashed their league, so I don't think they ever have, you know, real amazing preparation for the Champions League. But they just played a really high line, and their fullbacks were just wandering up the pitch the whole time, which isn't really the best way to play against Sanchez and Walcott. But 2-0, pretty routine win. There was about 10 minutes in the second half where it looked like Basel might put up a bit of a fight, but nah, very, very routine.
I mean, this is one of the things that kind of drive Arsenal fans mad about Walcott, is when he has a performance like tonight, where, you know, as you say, Sanchez was pulling all the strings and deserves a lot of credit. But when he has that kind of mature performance where he does put it together, you can see what they saw in him so long ago, where he's got the speed, you know, he runs into he uses it to run into positions, to find space.
Both of his goals were very good. One of them was totally made by Sanchez, but still he arrived late in the box with 3 or 4 players and just, Sanchez put it on his head, but he still had to, you know, get there and nod it in.
And then the other one, he played
a lovely, lovely 1-2 with Sanchez on the edge and just hit it really early, which is kind of a thing he does. He hits it really early low to the far post and he just got it right and it hit the far post. Absolutely excellent finish. Check it out.
It was the thing with Walcott has always been the injury record as well, hasn't it? He does have these stretches of games where he scores and then he'll get injured for, and you know, he can get a niggle and be out for up to a month, and I think it just really slows his progress. And there are a lot of players that can do that. The other thing he said this season is he's going to play out wide, and I think he's not playing in a traditional wide position, but he's playing wider where he can use his skill, but he doesn't have to beat the fullback, because that's the other criticism I've had of him, is that he's a bit brainless when he comes up against someone he can't run past. So I think now he possibly has found a really good position if he can stay fit.
I almost think my thing about, like, Walcott is, which is kind of what you're saying, is he will try the same run again and again and again. And it's like, in this game, I haven't seen much from the season, particularly when he's been in the team the last few weeks because I've been out of the country, but he just seems to be waiting more, and he'll wait and wait. And instead of charging straight and then, like, looking for the early ball and then, you know, tracking back 5 yards and trying it again, he'll just stand out on the wing, basically, watch the play. And then when Sanchez makes his move, that's when Walcott will make his move. And it's just a better, more intelligent and more efficient way to play. So yeah, he was very, very good tonight.
He's just, I mean, on that final point, I think the other thing is he's playing in between the centre-back and the full-back rather than outside the full-back, which I think is important. He's got Bellerin to go round him. He doesn't need to play as wide as he does for Arsenal at the moment. And I think that's a massive deal because, again, he doesn't have to be that man, and he can make that run inside, as you say, once Sanchez makes his move.
although actually tonight Bellerin was underlapping quite a lot, okay. So he would come inside, and then that would mean that Walcott like was against someone who was well out of position, or and they could really make the most of his abilities. So.
Yeah,
awesome. Andy, you watched Madrid.
I know. I went all hipster on the situation, didn't I? I was like, I went all European and ting.
Do you want to borrow my beard?
No one asked for a 90s R&B reference. The reason I'd watched this, actually, I watched this game last year. I watched both legs in the Champions League semi-finals. I don't know how I managed to do that, but I did watch both of them. And it was absolutely fascinating. It was fantastic. They were both amazing games. And it was really interesting tonight. It was a bit different tonight, obviously, with slightly less at stake in the groups. You know, both of these guys will go through in that group, I think, quite easily. But Atletico did their thing. You know, they did the 1-0 thing. They came out of the blocks very fast. Attacked Bayern and caught them, which is weird for a side like Bayern. They caught them really unawares. They didn't seem to quite understand what to do. And Atletico were after their 12th clean sheet in 13 home league games in the Champions League,
which is an amazing stat,
unbelievable record. And they get them all the same way. They come out of the blocks, they try and get an early goal, they then shut up shop and they play two banks of four, and they completely strangle the space just in front of their own penalty area. You can throw a blanket over eight players most of the time when they're defending. It's absolutely fascinating to watch, because if one of them gets out of position, the speed with which they're getting back into position is absolutely unbelievable. Mind you, if Simeone told me to get back in position, I'd probably do it as well. But that, you know, they really, it's a tried and tested formula. They get one up, sit with a blanket defence, and they just completely shut that space down. And Bayern, you could see what they were trying to do. They took off kind of a couple of attacking players, and we kept expecting Koeman to come on, and Robin did come on. But they kept bringing on central midfield. So Josh Kimmich came on and went to right back, and Lahm went into midfield. And they kept moving the ball wide, thinking that if they got the ball wide, they could get round the sides of Atletico. But they stayed narrow. They stayed really compact. And in the end, Bayern just ended up moving the ball side to side. And that's how Atletico can actually break teams down, because if they don't move the ball forward quickly, that team is in shape and there's no way you're getting through it. And the other thing I noticed, which is really interesting, is how they sit outside their penalty area. They do not get deeper at any point. They stay where they need to. If you watch the highlights, if you get the chance, you'll just see the two banks of four, probably about 15 yards apart on the edge of the area in a totally dominant shape, closing that space. But they give their defence room. So any forward pass has to be perfect, because Lewandowski's got such a strong line, he's got to time his run perfectly. So you can't go over the top to them, and you can't go down the sides because the fullbacks come out and engage. It's just fascinating to watch. It was a really good game. Griezmann missed the penalty as well with Atletico, which would have made it really solid. They didn't look that troubled, I have to say. Lewandowski,
really?
I think Bayern are a really, really... I know Lewandowski is a really good player, but I think they are, you know, they're an Aguero or a... maybe not Benzema, but a really... Lewandowski's in that top bracket of strikers, but he's not quite at that sort of Aguero level. And with a player like him in their side, they would probably go a long way in the Champions League. But they just looked a bit sort of timid tonight, and like they didn't really have a major plan of how to break Atletico down, which a lot of teams obviously don't have. But it was
interesting with Bayern, because obviously, you know, we've become used to a few of their sort of superstars hanging around the team for a while. They've just got rid of Götze back to Dortmund, but they've you know, we think about Ribery and we think about Robin, and obviously I'm not saying, you know, that their best days are behind them, but they are moving on in terms of their career. You know, they're getting towards the end of their career where, you know, perhaps they're going to play a part for 25 minutes in a game, or, you know, or an effective part for 25-35 minutes in a game, and maybe not so big a part for the rest of it. It's not like Bayern don't have options. Like you said, they've got Koeman, they've got Müller, they've got Lewandowski, they've got a world of players there. But, you know, a Ribery and a Robin at the height of their game is a shocking formula, and one that won them the Champions League. It's now, you know, a few years after that, and then I just don't feel like they are as potent. Not to say that they're not potent, but they're not as potent as like the biggest two or three teams perhaps out there right now.
I think they've stood still a bit this transfer window, probably. I think You're right about Ribbon Robin. You, if you factor in sort of Javi Martinez as well, who also is in the centre of the defence, and kind of, you know, he's not, I don't think he's particularly old, or, and you, they brought in Hummels, who's not the most mobile, and you've got Xabi Alonso in the middle of the pitch. This sort of feels like a bit of a lack of dynamism in certain areas of the pitch. You know, it ended up they, Thiago got taken off because he was on a second, he was on a yellow, and he was about to get his second yellow. He was absolutely marauding all over the pitch. And he got taken off, and you suddenly had Lahm, Alonso, and Javi Martinez playing in central midfield. And you were thinking, I'm not sure this is going to have the pace to play the ball forward quick enough to break down Atletico. But, I mean, a really good game. Again, as I said, they'll both qualify. And Atletico look really strong. I mean, I always wondered about their bench, but tonight they brought Gamero, who they bought from Sevilla. They bought Nico Gaitán, who they bought from Benfica. And they bought Thomas Partey, who's someone who they bought kind of, who's really quick and quite a raw player. But they brought them off the bench and immediately looked like they had legs. And, you know, for those players, they obviously took off Torres. You know, they do have a bit of strength in depth. And I think, again, they could go a long way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to see Simeone go a long way, just to see how angry he gets. It's more and more fun. Let's move on to yesterday's games. A quick cover of those. I mean, I watched a Spurs game, which wasn't the most thrilling game in the world. CSKA 0, Spurs 1. But I think Spurs will be really happy with an away win in a hostile environment. And I think Son will also be incredibly happy. I mean, I think he's been impressive since he sort of did his whole vow of commitment to the team. He took time off from the national game and stayed with stay with Spurs and train harder. And he's got his place in the side, and he's got a few goals this season. And I think they'll be really happy with his commitment and his work ethic there.
There'll be a few people who are adding him into their fantasy league teams. Yeah. I like it because you can shout, "Go on, Son!
Go ahead, Son!"
Classic dad jokes. Having said that, though, Akinfeev will be
from the only non-dad here as well.
yeah maybe you're ready. Akinfeev will be disappointed with the goal. He got a, you know, a fair amount to it and couldn't stop it squeezing in, but I mean he looked annoyed at himself, and he should be. It wasn't the best display in terms of that. But Spurs sitting second in the group, a point behind Monaco, who they, you know, basically dicked up against in the first game at Wembley. But I think what will be interesting, we've covered sort of both games, obviously only gone through Spurs quickly there, but it'll be interesting on Sunday, Spurs v City. They've both had games, Spurs at a hostile environment. City have been not run ragged, but they've certainly been given a good test tonight on a game they would have expected to win. They've had to work a lot harder than I think they would be expecting against Celtic. And it'd be interesting to see how that plays into Sunday. Both teams have got some squad depth. Both teams will be going into that wanting a result. So, yeah, a test of their depth and fatigue, I think. But, you know, Spurs will be happy with that. And I suppose a mention for Leicester. Anyone see the Leicester goal?
I did.
Yeah.
The drag.
Isn't it Slimani's third goal of the season or something already?
And
yeah, he's doing well.
And his fifth in four games against Porto. He's already scored against them for Sporting this season. Apparently, he's their kind of their bogeyman. And obviously, the commentator was ready with the Dragon Slayer tag that he was given by Sporting before he left, before the ball went in, which was choreographed. Always nice to see the commentators get their little bit of toffee for the game. It was like, oh,
more
God,
choreographed than my intros.
But he does. He looks like a really good foil for Vardy. He scored three goals all with his head. I think he'll be, you know, you look at Mahrez and Albrighton firing the ball in. I think he's gonna get goals, and it'll definitely damage Vardy's output if they're gonna start playing to him.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, worth saying, that's two CL wins on the bounce for City.
Absolutely amazing.
I think they're the first English team to ever do that with their first two Champions League games. I mean, not that we've had masses of teams in the Champions League, but that's still a decent stat.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a bit early for this kind of stuff, but do you think that we talked right at the start of the season about how Leicester might be a bit more defined by their opponents, like how they play against them and whether they block them out, but is it just that because they're not that well known in the Champions League that people kind of haven't figured out exactly what you know, lots of Premier League teams are now starting to figure out and pushing them to lots of draws and things this season, that they might actually do okay in the Champions League. Like, not go very, very deep, but get out of the group and, you know, have a few knockout
surely
games.
Porto are the biggest team in this group in terms of, you know, their current squad depth, you know, and what they've got going on in their history in terms of, you know, they've won it. You would think that a win over Porto signals the fact that they can do that kind of job. You know,
they probably need 4 points from the remaining four games to guarantee going through. Like, that's an excellent position to be in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing result.
Two home games against Bruges and against Copenhagen as well, which they're infinitely winnable. I think there's a thing about Leicester, is they're a scalp now in the Premiership. I mean, Liverpool absolutely flew at them when they played them in the Premier League, and you know, they did not give them any, they gave them no respect at all. They went after them because they knew they had to beat them, and I don't think clubs in Europe are still taking them seriously. They might start to, but again, I don't think their group's strong enough to keep them in. So I think they'll easily qualify, and then it's all about the draw.
Absolutely. Well, let's call it the halftime. Come to the halftime mark. Let's call it halftime. So we'll see you after the break.
Lallana there just keeps his head there. Quick feet, gets a deflection, and this time it goes inside the post, not hitting the post like he did earlier. What a finish for Sam in his first game.
Welcome back to the Libero podcast. Thanks for staying with us. We've covered off the Champions League, lots to talk about there, and we've covered off Big Sam and the England manager's job. I think we've all agreed it's Nigel Pearson. So let's move on to the Premier League. There's some big games to look forward to at the weekend. We've mentioned Spurs, Man City, but let's move on to Everton, Crystal Palace. I think this is going to be a decent test of both teams. Everton, with a disappointing result last time out, they'll be looking to get back on form. Any thoughts on this one?
I think, yeah. The Palace is fascinating at the moment. I mean, I'm really interested to see how far they can go with it, because I think Pardew's done something I'm not sure any of us thought was going to be possible, which was to take the side he had last season, which was get them playing, get them to stay up. Then they had a slump last season, and he has obviously spent money, but they have created a very, very strong core of a side with Benteke up front, and kind of a, you know, it's got a really strong spine. And I think if they can keep them fit and keep firing crosses at Benteke, they're going to win a lot of points. And Everton look a bit, they sort of look quite strong, but a little bit vulnerable as well. Like, they don't quite believe in how good they could possibly be at this moment. And I could see Crystal Palace winning away, which would obviously make me smile. But equally, I do think they're kind of up there on merit, and I think they're going to be one of the early sort of pace setters in the league.
Chris.
Yeah, I mean, not much to add to that, really. I think Everton had started well, had a little bit of a blip. So, yeah, just be interested to see whether they can bounce back. I mean, I don't really think Palace are up to much. I think they'll scrap their way through. They'll probably have, a couple of blips in the season. They'll probably finish in the bottom half of the table. I don't really see too much more than that.
I mean, one thing I think will be interesting now is, obviously, with the England situation being what it is, you've got Pardew, who we kind of know is interested in that job. And he's got a run of games now where he knows that, you know, that job's up for offer if someone performs well enough. He was trying to talk himself into it before. You kind of think, well, is the extra pressure going to be on Palace now? Is he going to look to turn around at bigger performances, go for bigger wins? I mean, I'd just be interested to see how it affects Palace, if it affects the manager in any way, shape or form, and how that'll affect their results. Let's move on. I just wanted to cover off two more games that I think are going to be pretty interesting. Man U Stoke, which I think on paper, before the league began, we would have been like, this is going to be a great one. This will be a barnstormer. Look at those teams on paper. This will be a really nice one. At the moment, you just can't see anything but Man U just walking this.
Yeah, I think they will absolutely pummel them into the ground. But then we thought that about Man City tonight. So maybe 3-3.
Yeah, 3-3 was a good one.
Stoke were quite unlucky against West Brom on the weekend. They looked like they'd attempted to go back to basics and tighten it up. But the thing I think is, if Man United continue the form and the movement they had against whatever team they played on the weekend, Leicester, that was it. then I think they'll have far too much of Stoke at the moment.
I'm actually quite interested to see what Arsenal do at Burnley this weekend, because it's exactly the sort of thing that I would expect from Arsenal, where they have an absolutely outstanding week and pummel two teams and put on a really good performance. And then, you know, Burnley got a win last week against Watford, who I don't know what's up with Watford. They're just up, down, up, down. It's absolutely bizarre. So, yeah, kind of interested to see Burnley, Arsenal. And then, yeah, because Watford are so up and down, like, I'm really interested to see like what they managed to pull out of the bag at home to Bournemouth.
Well, I mean, Burnley's a very tough away for, you know, a lot of the top clubs in the Premiership. I think you'll find it's a very difficult place to go, much actually tougher than the Emirates, White Hart Lane or Stamford Bridge. So,
shouldn't be judging any team on the back of that. Shouldn't
be. What do we think happens to West Ham if they lose at home to Borough?
Do you think that's it?
Bilic goes?
Oh, they've got to arrest it. Like, we spoke, I mean, me and Matt spoke at length last week about West Ham and where they are. You know, a 4-2 loss to West Brom last time out, and they're conceding goals for fun. They can't arrest that. If they can't arrest it soon, you know, they've got two chairmen there and obviously Karen Brady, and those three, regardless of what you think of them and the reputations and whatever, and what you think about the stadium, they've all worked as a trio goddamn hard to get that club in the position it's in right now. They've got a brand new stadium. They've put a lot of money into the club. They've seen it get promoted. They've established it as a Premier League club. They've even got it into Europe twice. They're not going to sit back and watch that team fall to bits.
Let's get fucking Harry Redknapp in there. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, maybe.
Fucking Harry Redknapp.
I just have a feeling.
Jermaine Defoe up front.
I just have the feeling at the moment about them. They've got Piatt. They signed to a big deal. You know, it was a big deal at the Euros. They've kind of got this. They've got the money now. They've had a big season. They got to Europe. Yeah, they didn't get through the qualifiers, but whatever. They're playing and then moved to the London Stadium. They're playing, they feel like they're playing the occasion and what's happened rather than the match in front of them. Last season, when they had those opening three results away from home, where they beat Arsenal, Liverpool, and I think Man City, they were just robust, hard to beat, hard working, and they played because they knew the situation they were in. They knew they weren't favourites for those games, but they knew that what they had to go and do. They don't feel like they're doing that. They feel like they're now playing up to something they think they should be. And I think it's about them figuring out exactly what the identity of the team is. They've changed a lot of players and actually kind of figuring out, you know, okay, we're in a new stadium, but we don't have to play out. We don't have to change the brand of football. We've got to this point and everyone was looking at us because of a certain thing. So why are we suddenly marauding forward and leaving the back door
Mark, open? Yeah, exactly. And Mark Noble is just like, I don't know what's happened to him. Like last season, Rich,
he's fallen off a cliff.
You were staking his claim for, you know, England spots and saying he's been one of the best midfielders in the country and he just gets overlooked.
He definitely deserved a chance and I'll stick by that for last season's performances. I think based on them, he deserved a chance at least to have a go in that side. But but the situation right now is his form's fallen off a cliff, as most of the West Ham players. Piatt's had more shots without scoring than any other player in the Prem right now. That doesn't mean he's misfiring. That just means that, you know, it's not going in for him right now. I think those stats will probably even out. But yeah, how long do you leave it? I suppose like six games isn't huge, but like how close do you want to get it to 10 and 15 before you start thinking about changing it up? And I think there's a comparison with Leicester here. I mean, you know, Leicester and West Ham knew, like you say, Lane, most games they were going into, they weren't favourites. They went in with a mentality that they were going to have to work hard for their results, and they did. And the rest of their season was then built off some initial confidence they had. And then they've come into this season, and I don't know if they've really adapted the way they play or their confidence has changed or they feel more confident just walking in. But there's, you know, there's not that hard work, there's not that effort, there's not that sort of teamwork that we've seen, certainly from West Ham. I mean, Leicester obviously sit in 12th, but, you know, still only on 7 points from six games, they'll be wanting more. So I think...
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned the 10 games there, because they've got Middlesbrough this weekend, and then it's away at Palace, and then home to Sunderland. So, you know, you could theoretically pick up 9 points there, and that'd be pretty good. But then they've got Chelsea in the Cup after that, so I wonder if that's like... I wonder if that it's if that is game. Like that that you know if you were you know if you're looking to earmark a game by which you'd want to have seen a turnaround, maybe that would be the one.
I'd think they'll have just in the final. I think they'll have too much for Middlesbrough this weekend. I think Middlesbrough don't quite know again. Talk stick or twist a lot of the time they're playing, and I think they'll have too much for them this weekend.
Absolutely. Well, quick mention for Liverpool here. They've got Swansea away today. Liverpool.
Oh, the Red Men. Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
It's just a quick shout out because Mane's won. I think it's Fans Player of the Month for the second month in a row, August and September. We spoke a lot prior to the season or while the transfer window had opened about how much was being paid for him. It doesn't look like bad money's been spent, does it, at all?
No, it's added so much to Liverpool in terms of the change of pace. One of the things we struggled with last season, or we've struggled with for a number of seasons, is, and we probably will struggle with at times this season, but is the breaking down of teams that just don't want to play. They just want to come and sit and try and get a point and walk away or try and hit us on the break. And we've really struggled to break them down. And Klopp saw getting Mane as that player with real pace. He is absolutely lightning. And he's really intelligent with the ball as well. He saw him as the ability to turn defences around in tight areas. And it's worked a treat so far. I hope he can keep it up. He's looked a little bit overawed in the first 20 minutes of both home performances we've had. Like he's sort of trying to live up to something a little bit, but then once he settles down, he's absolutely flying. Liverpool just are.
I think you need to lump two transfers together, even though they weren't in the same window here. But I think it's both Firmino and Mane. I think Firmino has been absolutely outstanding. Like he was looking better towards the end of last season after you got over your kind of apathetic slump, whenever it was after New Year. But I think this season he's looked absolutely amazing. He's like nailed on in my fantasy football team every week. Not that that means anything. But yeah, him and Mane, I think they're quite similar players in the way that they move and they can both play across all the front three and they play, you know, quite shallow runs and that. But Mane's definitely added like something more direct and more powerful as well.
I think they're both. Klopp was on Monday Night Football with Carragher on Monday. And was sort of talking about the philosophy of how they break teams down. And he sort of said, it's very simple. He said, wherever you are on the pitch, you know, if you've got to be hitting the box, that's basically your job. If you're in there are two centre backs and one player in midfield, a holder. It doesn't have to be the same person, but they are the people who stay back. There are other seven outfield players on the pitch, revolve in position up front to keep the other players guessing on in terms of where they're going to be. So they switch positions very readily, which is why you've got Liverpool sharing the goals around the season, why Lallana, even from midfield, is actually scoring more goals than he was, because
he's been really impressive as well this season.
He's got no duty to suddenly be in midfield. If he's in midfield, they've already started working on the fact that Wijnaldum will tuck in, or you know, someone will drop deep. That's why Sturridge has found it hard to adapt, but he's getting to the point where he can now drop deep and actually do a job when someone's gone ahead of him. So it is really, really fascinating. You know, it'll be interesting to see whether Liverpool can keep this intensity up, because we are playing in absolute bursts at the moment. Even against Hull, we scored five, but we really beat them in the first half, to be totally honest with you, because they were completely out on their feet. So it's really exciting to be a Liverpool fan at the moment, because for one, it's just brilliant to watch. And long may it continue.
I mean, while we're on the subject of managers, we shouldn't go through the podcast without mentioning Wenger's 20 years at Arsenal, which is an outstanding achievement in the modern game, given the turnover of some clubs. And, you know, a lot's been said about Wenger from fans, from pundits, from professionals, from Jose Mourinho, in all different kind of lights. But you know, regardless of what you think of the man, you know, or whether you think he should go or not, you know, I think the fact remains that he's going to go down as Arsenal's probably best ever manager.
You'd be hard pushed to find a fan of the Premier League over the last 20 years who didn't think that for at least, you know, large stretches of seasons or entire seasons or entire runs of seasons that Arsenal played the most beautiful football in the league. Like,
absolutely.
And I think like we're getting back to a bit of that now, and they're starting to look way more, you know, I think their style of play has massively changed the way that people think about the league and the way that people approach the league.
Their second goal was a proper homage to, I think, what he wants his teams to play like on Saturday. The way that they intricately move the ball absolutely, it's the thing that Arsenal have been missing for my money for a couple of years, is that real style of quick, incisive passing around the edge of the box and then quickly firing it wide and getting
it
across.
It's the pace of it that's been missing. Exactly. Yeah. They almost scored one like that tonight. There was a move that swept up the pitch, and there were a couple of like passes that, even though I was watching it on TV, I didn't see, you know, and there were a couple of like feints and things like that. And then Sanchez dinked it when actually he could have just rolled it in because the keeper had already come out and jumped. So it was a real shame, because for me that was up there with that that Jack Wilshere goal, and you know, obviously I just watched the highlights of the goal against Chelsea last week. Absolutely sensational.
Yeah, I mean, I think you talked about playing in bursts. I think that's what Arsenal did against Chelsea, and ironic, we wait like 5 years to get our first good result against Chelsea, and then we record on a Wednesday and we don't talk about it much.
Sauce.
But there we go. But yeah, no, Wenger undoubtedly sort of inspirational and important in the Premier League era, and you know, it's easy to forget he could have gone elsewhere, he could have chased money elsewhere, and he stuck with Arsenal, and Arsenal have been better for it, certainly. Let's move on from the heights of Arsenal to the lower league, with lower league liberos. There's a couple of games to cover off. I know my fixture list was pretty full, but do you want to start with Colchester?
Yeah, Chris? Well, I've been away for a bit, so maybe I'll just bring us up to date. I mean, I think they, having started the season reasonably well, I think probably hit a bit of a slump, being a bit shit. Although I was just looking at it, and actually they had a home win against Exeter, and they've got two away draws against Barnet and Crawley, 1-1, either side of a home defeat to Accrington Stanley. So on the face of it, I guess that's not too bad. Currently in 10th. I mean, there's actually been quite a lot of goals in the games, like Chris Porter in particular. I think he's got 3 in the last 4. And of course, my favourite player, Sammy Smodic, scored again against Exeter. It was a really, really good. I'm getting quite obsessed with him.
The ball in what kind of way? In a kind of parking outside his house way? Or?
Not that bad, yeah. But the ball kind of dropped in the area, and he turned and sent 2 defenders the wrong way and then turned back and then slotted it in the top corner. Really, really classy finish. He's going to be a really good player. Currently in 10th. I think they got a really difficult run of games coming up. So, firstly, Carlisle up, who I believe are the only unbeaten team in the league, and sit maybe 8th or something like that. And then they've got Newport, who are absolutely rock bottom, so they'll need to get a win there, because after that they've got Doncaster, who are 3rd, Morecambe, who are currently above Colchester in the league, and then they've got Plymouth, who are top. So yeah, they need to kind of to start turning some of these draws into victories pretty quick.
Absolutely. So, Lane, do you want to cover off Portsmouth?
Well, listen, I think I've stumbled upon Pompey at a time when they're actually going to go on the opposite route. They've been falling over the years, but I think this is it. It's going to coincide with their renaissance.
The pivot point.
Yeah, exactly. League 108. would you
like to claim partial responsibility for that?
I mean, I don't want to say that I've inspired them, but I think I probably have. But yeah, I mean,
you kind of do want to say.
Of course I do. I mean, you know, an enormous ego, and it helps. The Pompey's a tale of a home and away form. They've played 2 fixtures since Saturday. So Saturday they were at home and they absolutely smashed Barnet. Disappointing, because I quite like Barnet. 5-1, smashing their way up to 2nd in the league. Playing some really good football at home. The intensity and everything. I've watched some of the sort of as much the highlights as I could get online, and the football was really good. You can tell the ground is as intense as it was when they were in the Premier League. Really. The home crowd, there's a decent turnout. The teams that are turning up, they don't play in front of that every week, and the crowd's roaring them on. They're playing, they're moving the ball quickly. Their intensity is good. They want to win the ball back. You know, they've got players darting all over the place. 5 goals, shared them around. Not sure who any of the scorers were, although one of them was called Danny Rose, which was interesting. And I'm assuming it's not that Danny Rose, because if it is, that's a coup of a transfer. They
loaned for half a season.
They roared up to 2nd, but then obviously last night they played Blackpool and lost 3-1 away from home. Blackpool hadn't actually won a game since the start of the opening day of the season, so not in great form. And quite frankly, I think they had about 4 fans there, and 2 of them were actually the ground staff. So it wasn't a great advert for their football. The manager kind of came out and said, you know, he was talking about kind of that intensity, and that without the home crowd, they're struggling to kind of create that intensity. They're not working as hard away from home, and they've got to pick that up. But actually, I think at the moment, with the playing staff they've got and the way it's going, they're looking pretty good. If they can pick that away form up, I think it could be a decent season. I think they're still in fourth in 17 points, five behind Plymouth in first, but then something like 5 points ahead of like 20th. It's like the maddest league in the world. Yeah, they're all covered by like insane. 4 points or something random.
If you look at Colchester, who are sat in 10th at the moment in League Two, they're on 15 points, and so is the team two places below them. And if they had two more points, they could be up to third. But equally, yeah, if they had a few less points, they'd be in the relegation zone. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, obviously it's early doors, but it's very similar in League One. 11 points currently separating relegation and automatic promotion.
Well, the bottom team in League Two has 6 points from 9 games, which, you know, actually, if you think about it, that's not that terrible. Like a return from 9 games, we see in the Premier League, there are teams who are probably going to end up with less than that after 9 games. So,
quite. I mean, MK Dons, a tale of very much a tale of two games. Again, you know, to pick up on Lane's point. Home and away form, our home form continues to be terrible. I thought they'd hit a kind of moment in their season where it was coming together. They beat Fleetwood 4-1 away, which is an excellent result. Superb hat-trick from Colclough, who's on loan from Wigan. We mentioned him a couple of podcasts ago. 4 goals in 5 appearances now this year, obviously 3 of them at once, but decent return from a loan signing. And after, you know, them talking about needing to be more ruthless in front of goal, after, you know, talking up how good the performance has been and maybe they've been a bit unlucky, you know, that kind of felt true then. The, you know, 4-1 win away, big win, maybe you can base the rest of the season on it. And then they play their next game at home, excellent. They play Bury, they lose 3-1. And we're back to where we started because they just can't win at home. They can't get the results at home. They have more possession, more shots on target, but once again, can't make them count. And, you know, I was speaking to Matt last week and we were saying, you know, is this going to be a thing? Is this going to be a thing that affects their confidence going into the season? And they really just didn't need that result against a team like Bury. I think, you know, are currently now sitting second in the league.
Oh, Bury, absolutely bombing on. They had a pretty dodgy start, but I think they've won their last 5 on the bounce or something. It's them and Sheffield United are the ones absolutely blitzing that league at the moment.
They've won 5 in a row. You know, we played them when they won, obviously, when they won 4. And they're flying in terms of their confidence. It's exactly the kind of team they didn't need to play when it looked like they were turning their season around. They sit 14th. I mean, the next couple of games are actually pretty kind to them, if you ask me. They've got Oldham, who are 23rd. You know, the one off the bottom. They'll be happy to be playing them. But they've also got, is it Chesterfield? I think it's Chesterfield, I'm not sure. No, I think it's Peterborough, who haven't won in ages. I think they've won one in the last 10 or something like that. It might be Peterborough, I'll check that out. But either way, it's been a nasty sort of week or two for NK Dons. You know, after what looked like they were going to bring it back, they've come crashing back down to earth, and I do fear for them. I don't see them getting out of the league this year. I know it's only 11 points between relegation and automatic promotion. I know it's going to be a tight season. It's early in the season, but they're freshly down. They've not got their confidence back yet. Other teams are putting runs together, and I just do worry for them. But we'll see how they go. Should we move on? We're almost coming to the end of the Libero podcast, but I think we just wanted to give a quick mention to some Stadia.
Chris, do you wanna... Well, there's been a lot happening just in stadiums recently. Like, obviously, West Ham are kind of like struggling to make an impact, and there's been a lot of complaints there that it feels like the players look like ants because they're so far away from the pitch. And I know Liverpool have just opened a new stand, and I was watching, I can't remember what I was watching, but they were saying, I don't know how much of this is just lip service, Andy, but they were saying that it's been kind of like designed to channel the noise back into the ground and like keep it as loud as possible. And then obviously you've got like Spurs who are doing what Arsenal did a few seasons ago and playing at Wembley in Europe when they need to. So yeah, it just felt like maybe it was something to talk about.
I think that every club's trying to. There was obviously, being a Liverpool fan, the main stand is really important for Liverpool. I think we were apparently I can't remember the stat, but I think it was something like Liverpool make 3 million quid from match day revenue, either across the season or I can't remember for how many games. Man United in the same period make 12. The stadiums that these teams are building, Spurs are obviously, you know, at Wembley trying to take advantage of that. They're building a new stadium. Man City are building the other side of their stadium up. West Ham moving to London Stadium. The matchday revenue, although people are saying tickets are not important, they are trying to build this and more people can see these teams. I just think it's really interesting. Yeah. And Liverpool's has been such a long running battle. They actually started buying up houses to try and make room for this stand about 13 years ago. And about four different owners have tried to get the spade in the ground to actually get it sorted. And it's taken the Fenway Sports Group an amazing amount of lobbying, to actually get it done. And I think any of the stadiums that are in White Hart Lane, I know it's been exactly the same. I know Chelsea's going to be pretty similar. They're going about different sites. So I think these are long-run projects, but they are kind of vital for, you know, football is eventually going to eat itself in terms of the amount of money it earns. And these stadiums are going to be a vital investment for all the clubs that are making the investments in them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was over the London Stadium, as it's actually called right now.
Now, you've got plans, have you?
Well, you know, it's only called the London Stadium because they haven't got a sponsor yet.
Well, they can't actually sponsor it. I think it's part of the deal from the government. They actually aren't allowed to make money off the name of the stadium. I believe so, yes. Which is why they've gone for the worst name ever.
They'll be lobbying for change on that one.
Yeah.
It's all right because Big Sam knows the way around that, so that's fine.
I was over there the other week. And obviously, you know, the former Olympic Stadium, it's a nice stadium. You know, it was set up for the 2012 Olympics. It's very capable. It looks pretty. It's nice. You're right. There are seats that are pretty far from the pitch, which is not ideal. I think everyone would agree that, you know, the closer you can get the fans to the pitch, the better atmosphere you'll get. That, you know, and not that you want to put a complete lid over it, but the more contained you can get the sound as well. The more atmosphere you're going to get out of it. I mean, as we already alluded to, there's been trouble in that stadium already. They've not got themselves sorted out. The stewards that I saw that were trying to deal with a fight when I was there, which was more entertaining than the game on the day. But it is. You can see highlights on YouTube. Not that we condone that kind of thing, but. You know, they didn't seem to have it together. That they were kind of standing off them and letting them go at it a bit, which seemed all wrong. And I know that they've had, you know, difficulties with trying to get the police involved as well and the radio system over there. And this transition period that they're obviously in, you know, and now they've got, is coinciding with a poor run of games on the pitch. And that's just pissing everyone off. You know, the fans are unhappy. They feel like, oh, the team's changed. Whereas you can imagine it like four wins on the bounce and they'd probably be feeling quite good about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's the same, like, you know, being an Arsenal fan as well, you know, when they moved from Highbury, we had so much success at Highbury, a huge amount of success at Highbury. And then you move to your new stadium, it affects your transfer budget. And then we didn't win anything as was very, very well publicised for like a long time, and you know, and then people end up resenting the move and they end up resenting the stadium, or they think, oh, well, the team just changed when we moved there. And it's like, well, it kind of did, yeah, but through necessity of, you know, the budgets and things like that. So I think there's some degree of understanding that, you know, if you want your team to be a big team, they probably do need to play in a big stadium at some point, due to the financial, you know, to's and fro's that come with being a big club and to attract bigger players. But, you know, there has to be some level of understanding for fans. But I also sympathise with those that feel like they're giving away part of their heritage or they're worried about, you know, the history of the club.
Yeah, I think for me, like, all of that, like, the heritage and stuff like that's just something that time takes. The thing I can't understand is when they just move into stadiums and they haven't thought about the acoustics or how close the fans are to the pitch, because I think that stuff does have an effect on the perception of the club and stuff like that. And it's just, yeah, I know the West Ham didn't have much of a say, but certainly it's a big difference between where they are now and where they were last season in terms of the noise generated, and I'm sure that helps the team.
Does anyone know what's going on with Chelsea's proposed new stadium? Because the last I read that it was with the local council, but they were worried because it was going to threat the habitat of some bats in the area, which would be amazing reason for turning it down.
Turns out the Chelsea level of admin doesn't stretch to sorting out the bat habitat, huh?
I mean, there's definitely a pun in here somewhere. I can't quite get it, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Batshit crazy? Let's go for that one.
Nice.
I do think it's, you know, the pressure that's on teams. I mean, when Southampton moved as well, I mean, they moved to a big stadium, then they went down, and it took them a while to get back up. And it can do that as well. It puts you in a kind of financial black hole, as well as, you know, potentially pissing fans off. There's not many teams other than Juventus that I can think of that have made a stadium transition really, really successfully.
Well, everyone fucking hated their old stadium, the Stade Delle Alpi.
But that was based on a terrible stadium move in the 90s. The Stade Delle Alpi was built before the Italian.
That's the trick. Make a terrible move now so that it looks good in 10 years. Anyway, boys, I'm just looking at the lower league liberos, and I'm thinking we need to make a commitment. I think we've got to get to at least one game. All four of us have got to get down to watch one of our lower league liberos before the turn of the year.
I'm down with
this happen.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. We have.
Absolutely.
I was just looking at Colchester, and I don't think there's going to be much opportunity for libero derbies, unfortunately. Before Christmas, but there's a couple of tasty-ish looking games. There's a Charlton game in the EFL trophy,
nice.
Which is at home for Colchester, which I guess is kind of a derby of sorts, if you like. And then after that, they play Leighton Orient. So yeah, I'm thinking one of those might be a good show.
I mean, tickets might be like rocking horse shit, but when's the first Wimbledon MK Dons match? Because they're in the same league now as well, right? So, and Pritchard has Wimbledon. So, although again, yeah. I say like the tickets will be finding Lord Lucan, it might be worth giving it a bang to see if.
Let's hope they've got better security than West Ham on that.
Well, this is it.
Anyway, leave it with us. Leave it with us. We'll figure it out.
And on air levels of admin there, guys. Well done. Good admin.
Absolutely.
Well, I thought if we say it out loud and commit to it, it'll happen.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Just like when we initially doled out the teams, yeah?
No rollbacks.
It's time to come to an end, I think. Just a quick plug to remember to follow us on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/libero podcast. That's also the place to send us any messages. If you want to send us a message on Facebook, criticise my beard, my 90s styling, or anything we've said, there'll be plenty to criticise if you do that. Then do send us a message on there. But other than that, we look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Libero Podcast. Say goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, everyone.
I was born in this country.
Take care, everyone. See you later. Bye.
This is called entrapment.
Well, actually, it's called blackmail. Entrapment is what cops do to thieves. You coming?
Time to take your girlfriend out of the equation.